All right, Austin Weber.
How you
How are you?
doing?
I've been good, man. I've been good. I got a haircut today. I feel good.
Nice. I need one. I need one.
Yeah, I haven't had one since February.
I haven't had one since I was in Connecticut.
Really?
Yeah, that was the last place I've been that I could get a haircut in.
Where are you now?
Los Angeles.
Oh,
Back
okay.
studio.
Are you from the East Coast?
I grew up in a little town called Rye, New York, and for a time in the city itself.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
Is that where you recorded all your music before you moved to LA, or like all the stuff that's
no,
been?
I recorded all my music. I didn't start recording stuff. Or I didn't start re releasing stuff I recorded until I was recording in Boston when I was at college.
That's awesome. Oh, so okay. So do you feel like you're more connected to the Boston music scene, I guess?
Yeah, no, I mean, all my dudes are, the old Boston diaspora.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at school at Harvard there, and there was a cool scene. There's a cool scene, and some of my favorite bands are like, still. Oh, I got my Mr. Music,
There you go.
one of the great Boston guitar stores.
Yes.
Yeah, it's I love Boston. I miss
What's
it.
that venue by Harvard?
Sinclair.
Yeah, that's where I played last summer.
Oh, dope. I love the
That
Sinclair.
place is crazy.
It's really nice. Some of
Yeah, we were opening. I was definitely not headlining. I was opening, yeah.
the it's one of my favorite little venues. Or that was, it's a pretty big venue to play. I like doing
Yeah.
that one. But when I was playing there, it was mostly DIY stuff.
Cool.
Which I adore. Great basement slash house scene in Cambridge and the neighborhood across the river called Allston and Somerville. These are names that don't mean anything unless you're living in Boston, but
Hey, yeah, that's
great
cool.
city. I love it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, where else is there to play in Boston? Like, I was booking another tour in Middle East. I was talking to those people.
Oh yeah, Middle East is cool. They got canceled though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Middle East got canceled. I
Oh,
can't remember.
shit.
I can't remember why. Something about bad labor practices. I don't
Ooh,
know. But
that'll happen.
I saw some great shows there, which so I was pissed off that they turns out they're shitty people. But
Yeah, I
they
got
even brought cool folks in. They got Thundercat through. They got Lee
cool.
Scratch Perry. That was one of the
Cool.
best shows I've ever been to. That was
That's
wild.
awesome,
But
man.
yeah, Middle East canceled.
Oh shit. I almost played that venue, and then we played this place in Detroit called L Club, and then that place got canceled like the next week.
Whoa, you snuck in there.
Yeah, we played like one of the few shows, like one of the last few shows before they found out the owner was like stealing money and treating people like shit.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Craziness, man. How long have you been living in LA?
I've been here for a little over a year now. I graduated from college last summer and then moved here. Yeah.
That's cool. What was the inspiration, just to keep playing music or?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I was seeing, you're either New York, LA, or you're Nashville if you want to make a living in music, and want to, be in one of the scenes, so to speak. Well, I don't know. I wanted to move somewhere else. I imagine I'll end up back in New York
Yeah.
eventually, but I wanted to be in Los Angeles, and I have a lot of friends who live here and a lot of friends who are moving here, so I live here with two of my roommates from college.
Oh, cool.
They're yeah we're crew of you know, artists and stuff, and so we all make stuff together. It's really
Oh,
fun.
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice.
Nice. I love your little
We're
studio
very.
there.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, this is we got the whole little setup. It's this is where I'm making the next record. So I pretty much live
Yeah.
down here. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Little two-car garage action. So the doors open up and it's nice outside. It's pretty
Oh,
cool.
that's awesome. Are you making a record right now then?
Yeah, I'm in the mixing process. You heard it here first. It's
Oh
coming out
shit,
this
the
winter.
Ooh.
Yeah, but I'm finishing the first round of mixes as we speak.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you gonna
Where
pitch it around
you at?
to where am I at?
What? Yeah.
I'm in Santa Barbara.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I'm like an hour and a half north.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's the place to be, man. That's
It's nice, yeah.
Los Angeles.
It's nice. I would say come play a show up here, but no one can play anywhere right now. So,
Soon enough. Soon enough.
yeah. So, are you mixing the record yourself?
Yeah. Yeah,
I
so
hate that. I
you're
personally hate. I hate mixing, man. I
I
always.
love it. I love it. If you ever need someone to mix, I
Really?
love mixing. Yeah.
Oh shit. I may take you up on that, man.
Oh, absolutely. I love mixing. I love gear. I love stuff. So I engineer and I produce and I mix all my own stuff.
That's so cool.
Yeah. It's really fun. I don't master my own stuff though.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
can't. Those there, you know, there are wizards in the world who know how to do that. I'm not one of them.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, so we got connected because of Dan Boyle,
Yeah.
booking agent extraordinaire, and we played together in Los Angeles at the Moroccan Lounge. And that was have you played there before? That was my first time playing there.
I played there on a few tours. That was the last time I played there, because
Yeah.
I haven't played there since.
Yeah.
I like that venue a lot. I think it's the best sounding room in Los Angeles that I've been in.
I was like surprised. I shouldn't say shocked because I expected good things, but I was surprised. I was like, "Oh shit, this sounds really good."
I play there every chance I get. It
Yeah.
is, it it is, the engineers there are amazing. The thing, and one of the things that I don't like about venues is when they have the bar in the same room as the
Oh,
stage.
yeah.
That venue does it perfectly because they have, you know, just the normal double doors between the bar spot and the stage part. Oh, it's great.
Yes.
It's
Yeah.
great.
What's your big problem with the what don't you like about that?
The bar and the stage being in the same room,
Yeah.
is like I don't know. Just from like when I'm there going to see a show, right? Everyone's talking at the bar, and the so it you don't I don't know. It's all it's well part of one of the fun things about seeing live music is everyone sort of communing, coming together and doing one thing together, you know. All moving together and breathing together, and you know your heartbeats sync up when you listen to music together.
Yeah.
And then when you have the bar there, people are also there doing other things, and
Yeah, it kind of detaches the attention.
yeah, and so it's way nicer as an audience member when everyone is really together, and you can feel that energy when you're on the stage.
I think the Sinclair was like that too.
Sinclair has a yeah. Sinclair is like that. They have a tiny
Yeah.
bar window in the main room, but it's not distracting.
Yeah, just like a little
Yeah,
to-go-esque thing.
like the what's that spot? I won't mention spots that I don't like. I won't.
Well,
That seems kind of productive.
I know, but like, it's just a layout thing. I can't think of like the Echo has like the bars like right there in the middle. It's like it's unavoidable.
Yeah, but there's
And
that
then,
pole. For some reason, the pole in the Echo
oh
does.
yeah.
There's that one pole in the Echo that does a great job of separating stuff somehow.
Have you played Trees in Dallas?
No, I haven't. I
It
haven't.
literally has a massive like tree trunk in the middle of the venue.
That's pretty cool.
It
That's
is
pretty cool.
cool. Yeah, but you're like
Is it
walking
a
around, you're
real
like bump.
tree, or is it like a
No.
pole that they made to look like a tree?
It's a pole that they made to look like a tree.
That's a great use of a pole, let me tell you. There's a classic tree pole on probably East Coasters there, where you're taking the hutch up from New York, and you pass a little town called Harrison. There's a ginormous tree. There's like a 300-foot tall tree. And growing up, I was, that is the biggest. How is that there? And
Yeah,
of
totally.
course, it's a telephone pole. Telephone pole. This guy's. But then I thought I knew a little secret. I'm like, I know you're not a tree. Other people might not know that, but I know you're not a
I see
tree.
right through you, tree.
I knew. Yeah, pretty smart.
Harvard guy.
Yeah, exactly. I know what's a tree and what's not a tree. Okay, you show me two pictures. I can tell you which one has a tree in it.
That's crazy, man. So the East Coast, like, who were some of your people that you grew up listening to?
Some of the East Coast specific people.
Just anything, but I
Oh,
figured
yeah.
maybe it
I'll,
connects more to the East Coast.
yeah. I don't know. I mean, like some of the great Boston bands and folks. Of course, Jonathan Richman, the original Boston troubadour.
Totally.
Man, I adore him so much.
I saw him when he came to Santa Barbara last year. I think last year.
Yeah,
It was
I
just
was on
him.
that tour with Tommy on the drums. Yeah, I saw him at the Bootleg, which is another great bar in a separate room from stage venue. And I when I was at that show, I went to the bathroom, and all of a sudden I started having a conversation with someone, and then I realized that it was John C. Reilly, which is
Oh,
pretty
cool.
funny. He's really tall,
He's huge.
and he's and then I was like doing some digging into him the next day. Turns out he is a wonderful singer songwriter also, some wonderful interpretations of like traditional American music.
Dude,
It's wonderful.
have you seen Walk Hard?
I need to, it's on my it's on the old Letterboxd watch list. I need to watch it.
It's on Netflix now. You can watch it.
Whoa, I gotta check
It's
that out.
fucking great, man. I think it's hilarious. I went to Tim Heidecker show in 2016, and then they all went to the bar next door. Monty, what's that place? Terragram Ballroom. And then right
Yeah.
next there's a bar called Monty. So they all went after the show, and I was like,
Oh,
"Oh,
cool.
cool! I'll get to hang with Tim Heidecker." And I did, and it was awesome. We're all standing, like in a circle, like just hanging. It's John C. Reilly, it's Tim Heidecker. I'm like, "Holy shit! I'm one of the guys!" Even though they have no idea who I am, they're not talking to me. I'm just standing in this circle,
That's
and
really fun.
on the opposite side of the bar, I see a friend of mine just like staring at me, like, "Wait, Ruben's hanging out with John C. Reilly. This is my moment to go say hi to John C. Reilly." And so he comes up and he's like, freaking out on John C. Reilly, and he's like, "Thanks, man. Thanks for listening to music. Yeah, oh, thank you." And then he looks at me, John C. Reilly's like, "You got anything to say?" And I was like, "No." And I was like, "Damn it. I was one of the guys. Now I'm just like a fan, like standing next to him."
That's so funny.
I know. But hopefully I get my shot again with John C. Reilly.
I think you will. I think you will. I have faith. But let's see, other Boston dudes. Oh man, people need to get hip to this band called Horse Jumper of Love. Horse Jumper of Love. They are so good. Like, without a doubt, one of my favorite bands. Amazing Boston group. Everyone needs to listen to them. Horse Jumper of Love.
Yeah.
Same thing with Sydney Gish, wonderful Boston singer songwriter. She's fantastic. People have been starting to get hip to her.
Cool.
She's steadily climbing up now, which is wonderful, wonderful to see.
Cause that's
she's
awesome.
Fantastic. Yeah, Hush Club, The Water Cycle.
These are all active bands right now.
These are all active bands. These are some of my favorite Boston bands.
Cool.
Squitch.
That's a great name.
Yeah. No. All these. Oh man, Lucy. This is the real Boston stuff.
Yeah.
This guy is a genius.
Really?
His name is Lucy. I will be talking about Lucy my whole life.
Okay.
You just look up Lucy. But you're not gonna find him on Spotify if you just look up Lucy, because
that's a very popular name.
Yeah. So this is for everyone. Best of Lucy Volume 2. I'm gonna go into Spotify, make sure that's what I need to. I already have them up on Spotify. I'm currently listening to Lucy. Best of Lucy Volume 2, Best of Lucy, Volume 2, 2015 and 2017. That record has been on repeat for the past 3 years. His music has meant so much to me and all my friends in college. We know all the words. Oh man, it's Lucy. Great.
Okay, I'll check out Lucy. Probably because hits.
Those are the Boston folks right there.
That's awesome. I feel like it must have been pretty like inspiring to be around like a thriving scene where there's like a bunch of artists and people making stuff.
Oh yeah, it was great. It was awesome. We were all, you know, sort of living together and everyone really knew each other. It's nice. It was a small scene, which, you know, I think gets frustrating sometimes, but there's so much turnover because everyone's in college. There's always new people coming and people are leaving. And there's so many good players there. So many good players. Pretty much my whole band is Boston folks with few exceptions.
Had two people move with you, and are they also in your band? And then
the keyboard player moved out here with me. My drummer is current. It already lived in LA. Guitar player, or guy who I'm, also a Boston guy who moved out to LA, but now he's back in Boston. You know how these things go. So I think the scene was cool, and I was part of this program when I was in college called VES. Visual and Environmental Studies. They've since changed the name to AFVS, Art, Film, and Visual Studies, which sort of tells you what they do better. But
yeah,
I'm a sort of a VES purist. This is a schism in the whole department, but it's the best. We had like these huge studio complexes, and the professors would throw parties for everyone, and really, really cool. So like the best parties, the best shows were the VES ones. They were really, really fun.
Cool.
And
then you guys would play them, I'm guessing? Like
I played a few shows in the studios. But we normally the parties were DJs.
Cool. Oh, okay, cool.
All these sculptors, man, I studied sculpture in college. All these sculptors, there's a huge, great crossover of sculptors and DJs, and sculptors and musicians. So there was never a shortage of folks who were playing.
How'd you get into sculpture?
There was one professor, Jennifer Bornstein, who's an amazing sculptor. She is now teaching out here in a UC. And she was the one who like turned me on to sculpture. When I got into college, I thought I was going to study, I always knew I was going to study music in some capacity. But I thought I would study like classics alongside it, or I was a huge Latin nerd in high school. And then I came to college, sat in one Latin class, and after 15 minutes, I was like, not happening. Not doing 4 years of this. What I really loved was translating poetry, but you had to like stick out some really grueling, classes until you got to that part in the Latin program at Harvard. So
Whoa.
I still get to do it in my spare time, which is fun.
Do you get to sculpt? Do you get to sculpt in your spare time?
Translate Latin poetry. I try to sculpt as much as I can these days.
Do you have to get
But
that little plate, that spinning plate?
I don't really use clay. I
Oh,
use
okay.
mostly like large industrial materials.
Oh, cool.
I can later on I have a sculpture I made for my living room. I can show you.
That's what people want to see. We want to see your sculpture.
I'll show you a little bit, I guess.
That's
There's
okay,
a
yeah.
light over my desk. You can't really hard to see, but that's one of my sculptures. I
That's awesome.
started making light fixtures.
That's awesome.
What was I gonna say? Yeah, so I got to college, and my roommate freshman year all through college, my best friend is this guy named Lance Oppenheim. He's a filmmaker. He's a director, and so he shot a lot of my music videos. I work on his movies and stuff. And freshman, he went there to study film. He went there to study film. We have an amazing documentary program. Like, I had no idea it existed, but yeah, amazing doc program. And so he was always taking VES classes, the art department. And first year, I didn't take any classes because I didn't know it existed. And then he turned me on to the whole VES program. And first class I took was with this professor, Jennifer Bornstein. And I pretty much finished my music requirements my freshman year. And so from then on out, I was really deep in the art world. But I ended up doing a double major. And so
Cool.
that was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Damn, wild.
Yeah. Not a lot of people know this,
That's what I'm saying. We're getting the juicy. We're juicing, we're squeezing that
but
grapefruit.
my last record, Love Songs for No One, that record and the music videos for it were my thesis.
Oh.
It's got the distinction of being the only record and music videos to ever win the Harvard Thesis Prize. So that's
There you
pretty
go, there
cool.
you go. Damn, I'm gonna have
Yeah.
to think about that when I listen to it.
Yeah, but those music videos, they won the thesis prize that funded a whole bunch of stuff here and
Wow.
the tour, and it was pretty good. One of my mentors in college, I studied like a electroacoustic composition. That was what my degree was in, music. It was like crazy contemporary classical composition stuff.
Whoa.
And somehow my advisor, this guy named Hans Tuschku, my mentor in college, and still convinced the department that it was that like, yeah, this pop record, this fulfills the requirements. And my mentors, my advisors in the art department, a great sculptor named Nora Schultz, and an amazing filmmaker named Alfred Gazzetti.
Wow.
They like talking to, they're like, yeah, like music videos, of course that fits for like
Yeah.
what you do. So, and I don't know. So I was able to do it, and I ended up winning this big prize for it, which was totally unexpected.
That's awesome.
But it felt good. It was interesting to like have the stuff I do recognized in a really like strict academic setting. Although I felt bad at the presentation ceremony, like all the other prizes were going to like this guy,
Yeah.
like this guy solved all of, you know, Belarus's economic problems, and like this guy cured, like found a new way of curing malaria, and like this guy, this like this girl like sent herself to space. I don't know. And it's like, this guy, he made some music
He
videos,
made a record,
and
yeah.
he too. That was really fun. You know, one of my other friends won a prize for like crazy genius like dissertation on all this economic stuff, and like it's just really funny.
Yeah,
It was fun.
is
Maybe.
that intim was that kind of intimidating or?
Not really. I mean, you get used to it when you're there. It was just more fun than anything else. I
Yeah.
mean, the really cool part about being at Harvard was that, you know, everyone is so weird there. Like
Yeah.
everyone is so into what they're doing. It's really, really fun. So, you know, people aren't like, Harvard gets a weird rep for, you know, people always imagine, oh, everyone there must be like so serious and like
Yeah.
really, but everyone there is just so deep into what they're doing that, you know, everyone there is so open. I would go talk to professors that I didn't even have classes with. Like if you have a question on like any question you can imagine, the expert for that, you know, the guy who has the answer is there, right?
Yeah.
There's someone there who knows. And all you have to do is like send them an email or just like literally knock on their door and you can have a conversation with them. So like I wound up like talking about, you know, if I had a question on philosophy, I'd just like go to Cornell West. I
Yeah.
can go out with Cornell West. It was awesome.
That's
And
awesome.
you know, a question on like physics. I knew one of my professors worked at CERN. I studied celestial navigation with him.
Cool.
Like wacky people, amazing people, but like everyone's super open. I'm on like a weird little mission to dispel the stuffiness myth,
Well, the whole
because
thing with like National Lampoon and like kind of started there, didn't it?
oh yeah, all my buds are Lampoon guys and girls.
Yeah.
The folks I live with here are all Lampoon people. I was
Oh, cool.
a fun little scene to exist alongside.
And Conan O'Brien, also
Yeah,
Harvard grad. Yeah.
also a Lampoon guy.
Whoa.
So all my friends out here are comedy writers. Always doing stuff. The
Yeah.
reason my name was Train. When I logged
I
in,
noticed that.
we were doing like a Zoom. We were doing like a comedy sketch, making fun of some Zoom stuff. The Zoom, you know, the Zoom cast reunions.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were doing a cast reunion for the movie where the train drives at the screen and everyone jumped out of the way. And so I was the train.
You're the
I was the train.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that's why my name was Train.
That's all right. Yeah, well, I think that's really cool to like live with people who are also just not musicians as well, and they're comedians and writers and yeah, I
Yeah.
just feel like there's that's just like a great place for inspiration and it's like a lot different than when I grew up. I was like constantly trying to look for, like, does anyone want to play music? Like, and it was like so hard to find musicians like all the time.
Where'd you grow up?
In Santa Barbara, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so everyone just wanted to chill, but nobody wanted to
Yeah.
nobody wanted to play. Like, everyone played guitar, but it just knew like a Sublime cover, and that was it. You know, it's like, fuck.
That's so funny.
I know.
Yeah, the scene I grew up in New York was really cool. I was a session singer when I was a kid. So when I was, you know, like really young, before my voice dropped, I was in and out of, you know, all the studios in New York doing like super random like jingles and commercials. And
that's hilarious.
I remember I like did a radio spot for Cool Whip where I had to rap, like really, really wacky yeah. stuff. And then when I was in high school, I started playing with this guy, Charlie Legan, who's like one of the real old school cats. One of the real killer session sax players. Played with Kid cool. Creole and the Coconuts all through the 80s and stuff, and August Darnell. And I played in his band when I was in high school. And that was like my education right there in how to like exist as a musician and put on a show. And it was great. So, but yeah, there wasn't so much of a scene where I was. I was super lucky to find him. Charlie Legan, man. And so
yeah, when I'm in New York, is that where you're?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You go. Is that kind of where also your recording started?
Yeah, you know, I was always recording stuff. I still have some really crazy like 4-track recordings I did when I was like 10. Mm-hmm. You remember like the early MacBooks that, you know, are yeah. like this thick? I had like, you know, GarageBand 2000.
I got one over here somewhere.
Oh, hell yeah. You had to press the button for them to pop up.
Oh, no, wait. Mine's a little newer than that. Mine's from like 2009.
Yeah, I had to press the button to make mine pop up.
Oh, wow. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, I must have been like, what? How old are you in fourth grade?
I think you're like 8, right?
Yeah, something like
8
that.
Or 9, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like 8 or 9. And when I got my first, like, when I got GarageBand,
cool.
And I had like, I don't know, like my dad's old laptop, and I still have some recordings I made back then, like some
oh cool
early 4-tracks. They're crazy. Like yeah. there's some like really wacky originals, and then like a truly epic cover of Hey Jude that I did. it's long. It's the whole thing. Yeah. it's really funny to like, you know, 8-year-old me like doing the ad libs at the end. You just hear this.
Yeah.
It's really a trip. But yeah, I've been recording stuff forever. And so, you know, it's definitely a part of. In you know, in the art world, we always talk about like someone's practice.
Yeah,
that's sort of how I think about what I do, and so
that Malcolm recording... Gladwell 10,000 hours.
Yeah, recording and engineering and like the studio side of stuff is definitely a part of my practice. You know, it's definitely cool. a part of what I do.
Cool.
But you know, there's a great studio in Boston called The Bridge that I wound up. Recording a lot, and a great mixing engineer there, Alex Allenson, who taught me a lot of stuff that I do now.
The more I think about it, it's just like, do you think it's more of like the room? Do you think the room has more to do with it than like what you're recording with?
I would say the room has almost nothing to do with it.
Really?
To be honest. I mean, this room sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's got high ceilings. That's something, right? I don't know.
Well,
maybe
I mean,
you don't want that. I don't know what you want.
I mean, what's really not fun about this particular room is the floors are really reflective, so I just have tons of carpets everywhere. And all the walls are just drywall, which is also
yeah.
really reflective. And
yeah.
so I have, you know, blankets in some spots. And we have, and this room like resonates to the sea. And it's been my mission, like, for the past year now, to dampen that resonance. But I've been too, it keeps coming back, man. And
Yeah.
these garage doors are super reflective, and they,
Yeah.
those, that's really what does it. But, and so, you know, I used to be a huge room proponent, you know, but, or, you know, at least when I was growing up, I was a big room proponent, whatever that means, when you're in high school.
Yeah.
But the records I made in college, I recorded in like a closet. I basically rigged up. So, Love Songs for No One. Here's another like fun little recording fact.
Yeah.
We had I recorded it. I went back to school in January when no one's on campus. So we have the whole month of January off. We call it J term. And
Okay.
so all my roommates were gone, and so I had like a month where no one else was on campus. It was just me, you know, I felt like a little gremlin or something,
Yeah.
like scampering between buildings and stuff. But I converted our dorm room into like a studio, pretty much. And so my room was the lot was the there was this tiny room that was only wide enough to fit like a twin bed. It was L-shaped, and it had these huge bay windows on the bottom of the L. And then both sides of the L were just wide enough to fit a twin bed in there. It was tiny, and it was the craziest room I've ever recorded. I recorded the whole record in this tiny room. I couldn't fit the drums in there. You had to like fit them in sideways. There was so I set up the drum mics first, and then I moved the kit in there. And then I didn't touch it for like the next 3 months. I had to leave all the mics up and everything because I
Oh
couldn't
my
take
God.
it down. There was no room to reach around everything. But it was the craziest room setup ever because you have these super reflective windows, and then everything else is insanely dead because it's basically a closet covered in carpets everywhere. I just put
Yeah.
all sorts of stuff up, and that was. And you know, I figured like if I can make a record recorded in that room sound good, like I can do anything.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, I just spent a ton of time tinkering with miking techniques, and you know, always reading on what other people do, and messing with stuff. So you know, I took a week to just like tinker with my miking setup for the drums on this record to until I got it right where I wanted it.
Wow.
And I like that freedom that working in your own studio gets you,
Yeah.
because the sounds for me are you know super 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 important. Songwriting definitely the prime mover, but the sounds are such a ginormous part of everything that I'd like to be able to devote as much attention to those as I do to like word choice and you know, melody.
Yeah. When you think of like Harvard and the kind of major that you had of like, it seems like, I don't know, the connection between the music you make and like your education history like are kind of opposite. It's like nice, simple music. Do you ever feel like you need to complicate things, or are you trying to keep it nice and simple, like a Jonathan Richman?
Well, I mean, I think it was certainly my education that allows me to keep it simple.
Yeah.
You know, I made a ton of music when I was in high school. I wrote a ton of stuff in high school and early college that's never going to be released.
Yeah.
Or, you know, who knows? But it's so complicated. It's so like I was trying to be some trying to do all this stuff. You know, trying to sound really smart, trying to
Yeah.
like be really clever. It doesn't, it's not, that's not what it's about, you know. And it took me a long time to find my voice.
Yeah.
And it was about it was the lessons I learned from my professors, just being like, you know, basically the learning how to like my sculpt, learning my sculpture, learning my sculpture, like all my what, let me see how to phrase this.
Yeah.
What I learned in school, what I took away from my degrees or whatever
Yeah.
was the ability to crit. We call it crit in art school. You make stuff, but then you also crit. So when someone finishes something, they bring it before the class, and you all sit down and you ask them questions. And the same thing when you're music. So I remember the first class I ever took was with the guy who would become my, like, who is, you know, my closest mentor, a guy named Hans Tuschku. An incredible composer, just like a true genius. He is like a light in darkness. And his I remember I like somehow managed to wheedle my way into like his entry level graduate class. And so I was, you know, this small 18-year-old kid, never been in a college class before, much less like a college composition class, much less like a grad school environment. And I was really just thrown in with all these like 30-year-old composers who like knew what they were doing and knew had like a sound and like a mission and a and they knew how to talk about their work, right? They knew how to talk about other people's work, and they were, you know, wonderful. Some really dear friends now. And I remember the first time I ever like I finished a piece, right? And I played a recording of it for the class, and they started asking me questions about it, and I was answering them, and they're really complicated questions. I wasn't doing a good job. And I remember Hans took me aside after that, you know, one of those first classes, and he's just like, "Austin, I can tell you're not like you're not being honest with the work, and you're not being honest with yourself, and like you're not like he basically just like he like all the stuff that like lessons that I could have like I don't know I have to go back. I wrote it down, all the things he
Yeah.
told me, but you know, like tough lessons. And you know, it totally changed the way I talked about and interacted with my work, and totally changed what I was doing. And you know, it's about being honest, and it's about being like authenticity is a word that gets thrown around so much that it sort of has lost a lot of its meaning. But like authenticity is just about being authentic with yourself, about being authentic with what you like and what. And what you think. And so, you know, I think the academia has a gets a bad name, sort of academic art gets a bad name for being super complicated and all that stuff. But what I learned was to really be honest, and that was always about keeping it simple. Because people know when you're faking it. People know when like you're doing something that you don't know how to do and you don't have internalized. And you know, so Hans was a big player in that. And another one of my professors, guy named Stephen Prina, who an amazing multimedia artist and also an amazing musician. Like the lessons I learned from him and with him and Jennifer about just being authentic and being like, you know, doing something that you believe in and not doing it to be smart, but doing it because it's good, you know?
Yeah, it feels good.
Yeah. And so I don't think I'd be, I mean, I don't think I would have the personal freedom to write simply if it wasn't for the education I got. I mean, that's where I learned the.
I think those early years of songwriting, I started writing songs when I was 15. That's like when I learned guitar, and I only picked up a guitar because I wanted to write songs. So it's like just trying to write something meaningful and that works for you, and it's about your life or whatever, even if it's not about your life, but like it means something to you. Because at the end of the day, you have to hit the road and you have to sing these songs every night.
Yeah.
And if it's not, even if it's not hitting, you're going to know. If it's not hitting to you, then how are you supposed to sell it to the audience if it's not striking a chord with you? Hey, there we go.
Yeah. I mean, so many people talk about being original and stuff.
Yeah.
But you know, trying to be original just makes it super jaded, you know?
Yeah.
You just gotta let yourself be original. And
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, there's no, it's sort of something that you have to, like, you know, I don't know, man.
The craft. Just two guys discussing the craft.
Yeah, you know.
That's the synopsis for the podcast, you know. Just two dudes.
Love the craft.
You gotta love the work, you know. You just gotta love the work.
Yeah.
Have you done a lot of touring? Do you like touring?
I love touring. I've done a shit ton of touring.
Really?
In general, but with
as Austin Weber and other people's
bands, as Austin Weber, I've sort of, it's been the past 2 years of touring.
Wow.
Normal amount of touring. Yeah.
Like two a year or?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what we try to do. But when I was in college, I was in this a cappella group called the Crocodillos, the Harvard Croc. And we would tour for about 6 months of the year.
Wow.
Doing like 200 shows a year.
Oh my God.
All over the world. We'd go to like 25 countries playing, you know, a show every day, sometimes two, sometimes three shows in a day.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was,
that's fucking boot camp so right there,
crazy.
Man.
Crazy. Holy shit. Yeah. Wild. The hardest job I will ever have in my life was I was the director of that group. I was in that group for only 2 years.
Yeah.
You burn out if you do more.
Yeah.
My freshman year and then my sophomore year, I was the director, music director. And that was the hardest job I ever had, to like direct 200 shows. And like, we learned so much rep. It's crazy. I mean, it was bonkers. It was so much fun. It was the best 2 years of my life. It was great.
Oh my God. Yeah. So then it makes like a 3 week tour with their bands. I'm like, oh, this is easy.
Oh, it's nothing.
This is nothing. Oh, we'll be home in a month. Okay, cool.
Yeah, we would do. I've gone like, you know, 4 months at a time living out of the same suitcase, like only in countries where I do not speak the language. And then you're like, you mean I just got to drive around the US and like,
yeah,
I get to like eat at normal restaurants. Yeah, this sounds great.
Yeah, yeah.
We get a La Quinta and a Best Western every night. Like,
totally, totally.
I don't know. I mean, I did a ton of touring. You know, it's, I was going to be on tour this summer. I was going to do a big long tour, but obviously kaput. So I'm hoping this May, I'm hoping to get out on the road again. After the record is out.
Cool.
We'll see, of course, but
yeah. Are you going to self-release this next record?
Yeah, so I have my own label,
Cool.
but we just signed a deal with The Orchard, which
Cool.
is a Sony BMG company,
Ooh.
with whatever that means.
Yeah.
And so The Orchard's going to distribute it,
Sweet.
and I'm psyched for that. You know, it's a
Yeah, is that one of those things? So it's like more of like a licensing deal where you still own the masters, but they're
Yeah.
putting it out everywhere. That's cool. I feel like that's like the next wave. Like, I don't think a lot of labels are gonna ask for masters, and nor should we give it to them, you know? Like,
No, absolutely not.
yeah, which I think is cool. I think the industry is changing, especially after this year. Who knows how much the industry is about to change in the next like year? So it's like it's good to just. Yeah, but that's great, man. That's big news.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, it's
Yeah.
I'm really excited. I'm really excited. I'm really excited for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
One thing I
But
wanted to bring up is aside from music, I feel like you're one of the few musicians I know who has like a nice following on YouTube. And most musicians I know have just like not thought even thought about YouTube. You know, like,
yeah.
was it conscious for you to focus on YouTube? Do you like making videos and putting them online? Like,
Well, I love making movies.
yeah.
I end up like a you know so many of my best friends are directors. The last film Lance and I did, we premiered at Sundance this winter, which was super fun. We you know another like just a ton of my friends are directors. We all make movies, and so it was sort of a no-brainer to be making music videos. But the like I didn't anticipate having such a huge YouTube following. That was pretty,
Totally.
you know, a few things caught on big time, and
A
just
few of the
randomly.
videos.
Yeah, like the YouTube algorithm is weird. There like we made this throwaway, my band and I made this totally so when we were in Torrin, Fredericksburg, Virginia,
Yeah.
there's this law firm that we drove past on the way to our show. A big building we drove past on our way to a show with on the top it just said Allen, 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 and Allen. Dude, amazingly funny.
Yeah.
And we were touring with it was the band was me, Atticus, my drummer, Scott, keyboard player, and Tucker, who's a stand-up comedian who would open for us. And Scott and Tucker are my roommates also.
Yeah.
We drove past that sign and we're like, okay, we can't stop now, but if it lights up when we drive past it on our way back to the hotel, like we got to do something. It's so funny. And so the four of us made this like totally throwaway minute-long video called Alan, 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 and Alan, where we were the four Allens who lived in that building. And we put it out. It was normal, you know, like normal amount of views for a little video. People liked it or whatever. And then like a month after we released it, totally randomly, without any
Yeah.
warning or anything, it went viral. All like
Whoa.
all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it was totally bonkers. And so all like I went from like doing modest numbers, right? And one day it got like 400,000 views.
It's like, what the fuck?
I know. And then the next day, it just
Yeah.
went back to normal again. It was
That's so
all of a sudden
weird.
it was being recommended to people. And I mean, I don't know a ton about machine learning.
Yeah.
One of my all of my best friends in high school are all or a couple of them, they're all insanely smart. A
Yeah.
couple of them are like crazy computer science physics people. One of them's getting a PhD in physics from Princeton right now, and he was trying
Wow.
to explain to me machine learning. It's crazy, man. But my only point of bringing that up is the YouTube algorithm is all machine learning.
Whoa.
It's a neural network. And as far as I understand it, it just basically a neural network carries a ton, like it's able to function in a, it doesn't matter. Anyway, nobody, not even the people who work at YouTube, understand how the YouTube algorithm works because it's all machine learning and neural networks. And so it's just like the all it does is it maximizes view time. So anyway, anyone who's interested should go look up how the YouTube algorithm works. It's worth it. It will be instructive. I promise that. But it is
It
bonkers.
increases view time, which makes sense if they're trying to sell advertising, you know? That's like
Exactly.
what they want.
Yeah. So basically, they have this crazy amount of computing power, but then they have to direct it. So they had to come up with the way to say, oh, they have to give it a task, right? That's a crazy thing about a neural network is you just give it a task. Of course, I'm sure I'm over, someone's gonna yell at me for oversimplifying this,
It's fine.
but like, so that they get the task they gave it was most view time, maximize ads. And so I guess something with that video, all of a sudden the algorithm was like, this one today is what we're
So,
gonna watch.
so nuts.
So nuts. And so it's just like weird isolated incidents like that that have shot up my YouTube viewership to a level that I'm proud of. Like
Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm it's great. I mean, and music videos are just cool little I started thinking about them as like advertisements for the music, right? But
Oh,
now they're
yeah.
totally onto themselves. I grew up watching movie musicals. All I wanted to do, was be Gene Kelly when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And, my favorite director is Jacques Demy. I just love like Cherbourg. And my favorite is, Singin' in the Rain is the best movie musical of all time. That's for me, that's canon. But my favorite is The Young Girls of Rochefort. It's another Demy movie, Les Demoiselles. And just like that's all I want to do is make movie musicals. And so the music videos are a cool way of doing it.
Of doing that, yeah.
And there's I always put like little Demy homages in them. No, I'm interested to see if people point them out, but a nice one is there's a scene in Les Demoiselles where there's a dance sequence in this cafe. These two guys singing a song in a cafe. And so a lot of those camera movements I copied pretty like for like into the Love Songs for No One music video. I don't think
I'm
anyone
gonna
picked
have
up.
to look for that one. Yeah, my
Oh.
girlfriend's been trying to get me to watch Gene Kelly ones too, because she's obsessed with him.
Oh, well, yeah. Les Demoiselles, also a Gene Kelly movie. He
Yeah,
has a he's like the American in that movie. It's
I got. Damn it! Now I'm gonna have to watch it. I've been putting it off. I'm like, yeah, we'll get to it. We'll watch it. But now I will watch it now. Yeah.
I promise you it won't disappoint. It is
Okay. Good.
spectacular. It's gorgeous. The music is amazing.
We watched On the Town. Is he in that one? That's with Frank Sinatra.
I think maybe, I don't know.
Maybe. That one
I'm
was on Turner Classic the other night.
the, all those MGM movie musicals really sort of blend together after a little
Yeah, they
while.
do. It's just like we're sailors and we're out in the town.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
why I recommend starting with Jacques Demy. He'll like
Cool.
blow your mind
Okay,
with
cool.
what can be done with a movie musical. Yeah, so good. What was I gonna say? Oh, Chazelle, Damien Chazelle, and his partner, what's his name? What's his name? What's his name? What's his name? Who wrote the music for Justin Hurwitz? No? Yeah, Justin Hurwitz. They're both VES guys too. They're both Harvard
Oh,
guys.
whoa.
Yeah, there's a strong tradition of movie musicals in Harvard,
Yeah.
apparently.
Did you know that prior?
To going?
Getting into that program? Oh.
No idea. I had no idea.
Oh, okay.
even know we had an art department.
Okay.
I just got so lucky.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Agnes Varda, Jacques Demy. There you go. But I grew up in New York around a ton of musicals. My mom is
Cool.
hugely into musical theater, so to this day, I know every word to Rent and Les Mis, and that was like a soundtrack growing up.
I feel like that's a very East Coast thing because I don't think like plays and Broadway, it's like it's so East Coast. I don't think that's a thing over here.
No, not
Unless
really.
the shows start traveling, unless they get big enough and popular enough where they start traveling over here, but I feel like it's
Yeah,
not a very big
I
West
was
Coast
lucky
thing.
to like grow up around that scene.
Yeah, that's
Me
awesome.
and my first music teacher, I grew up playing drums. I grew up studying West African percussion, or like sort of North African. My first instrument was a tumbek,
Okay.
which is like this, like it's shaped like a djembe. It's very small. It's made out of steel with like a stretched head.
Oh, yeah.
With
I've
it,
seen
so like
those.
that was my first instrument, tumbek.
Yeah,
My
wow.
drum teacher when I was a kid, Dean Thomas, he was a pit percussionist, and so I used to like, I don't understand how they let this happen, but I was able to go down into the pit during the show. I was like a 5-year-old kid, and they just all the I remember he was the pit percussionist for Aida for the longest time. And I would just like sit in the Aida pit, like in a corner and just like watch the musical happen from the
Whoa.
pit. It was amazing. I don't understand how as a 5-year-old they let me do that. I don't understand how I was trustworthy enough, like not make noise.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, you know, they trusted me and they let me sit down there and Dean, man, Dean Thomas,
Yeah.
like the amount of faith that guy put in like a tiny little kid, crazy. And I owe a ton to him. Yeah.
Well, for someone who plays drums, you sure do love that drum machine.
Oh yeah, you bet. You
Yeah,
bet.
man.
There it is, my CR78 on the shelf.
Oh, I love it.
I love drum machines. They're so much fun.
Yeah, because I was always, maybe it was just like, maybe it was the generation ahead of us, but like, my drum teacher was always like, on that drum machines have no souls, like, vibe. But I think as we, our generation's been like, who cares? Just use it. Like,
Yeah, I mean Ableton has even less soul. Like
yeah.
it's so funny. Like when the CR78 came out, everyone was like, but then, you know, now we have all this other crazy bullshit, and all of a sudden the CR78, you know, all like the Rhythm Ace and all that stuff, those are what has. But you know, people have been using them forever, like in soul meeting settings. Like
Totally.
great examples are the early Sly and the Family Stone records, Sly
Yeah.
Stone, tons of the Maestro King Rhythm Ace. Oh,
Yeah.
and the best drum machine record of all time is Naturally, the J.J. Cale record.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. Like
Yeah.
the drum machines on that record are incredible. And you don't think of the drum machine being like a blues instrument, right?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't, no one would think to do that, but it is amazing. All
Dude,
the original version of Call Me the Breeze and like Cocaine and all that stuff, all the classic J.J. Cale songs are all drum
totally.
machine tracks.
Dude, and Rock Your Body by George McRae starts off with the drum machine.
That's a classic.
That's
That's
a
a classic.
classic one. Yeah.
Yeah, but I
I've been
mean,
looking. I've been trying to figure out what drum machine is that, 'cause that sounds so good.
what? Let me listen to
It's
that.
it goes like it's like, oh girl, let me in your arms, rock you baby. But there is like a drum machine right in the beginning of that track.
Hold on. We can
Okay.
figure it out.
We we have technology. We can actually.
That sounds like offhand, that sounds like a Roland machine. Let me see, because I also recognize the loop.
Yeah, the like bossa nova loop.
We're gonna figure out what drum machine that is. That sounds like a CR78. I don't think it is. It is. Oh, an
Oh.
early Roland rhythm machine. Oh, I knew it was a rhythm loop or a Roland loop.
Yes.
I don't think
Yes.
it's a CR78. Otherwise, I would have. Otherwise, because I don't recognize the loop, but I know it's a Roland machine. Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy I just proved my drum machine credits. Like, I know what it is.
Yes, yes. Oh yeah, I love that track, man. That's such a good
Oh, it's
song.
so
And
good. I
yeah.
mean, drumish, like one thing I just learned recently, Steely Dan, man, a lot of those are drum machines. A lot of the Steely Dan
Really?
tracks, Gaucho, the whole record
Oh yeah.
is a drum machine.
Dude, I love Gaucho. Shit, I gotta listen to that
They
again.
so I mean, Becker and Fagen got super pissed off because the drummers weren't perfect enough for them.
Yeah.
Classic, you know.
Yeah.
And so they were talking to their engineer, whose name I've forgotten, unfortunately. They're like, dude, our drummers aren't good enough. Like, nobody's perfect enough for Steely Dan. A and B, of course, they were recording those records like over the course of months, like in tons of different studios all over the place. So they were frustrated that they couldn't get like a consistent drum sound. And so their engineer, like in one crazy night, invented a drum replacement machine called the Wilton, the
Yeah.
Willard. If you just look up Steely Dan drum replacement machine, you'll figure out
Yeah.
what it's called. It starts with a W, I think. Maybe it's Milton. I think it's Wilton or something. But that let them, you would play the drum track. And then it would sample replace. It was like a tape sample replacer, which is the most crazy thing I've ever heard of. A
Yeah.
tape sample replacer is
Yeah.
wild. Like digital sample replacers don't even really work. But like, holy shit, those records! I did not know that was a drum machine.
Holy crap.
They're sample replaced drums.
Wow.
Totally worth checking out. The machine to get one of the machines costs like
Oh,
$80,000.
shit.
You know, they're like Fairchild 660 level, like grail gear.
Oh my God.
But like I did not know any of that. It is like a wild. But
That's wild.
I
Dude, I
don't
love
know.
that record. Now I have to go back and listen to that record.
Yeah, it's wild. It totally crazy. Yeah, I love drum machines. Big proponent of them. Quick shout out to Bjork's drum machines.
Yeah.
Probably the best drum machines on the whole. Bjork, Vespertine, one of the amazing drum machine records.
Wow.
I there's not enough drum machine on the new.
Wait, which record's that? Is that the one where she's like this?
No, it's the one where she's in white.
Oh.
No, that one is Debut. That's
That's
her first
debut.
record.
Yeah.
There are drum machines on that one too, I think. That one's my favorite. Or have you seen the Bjork live records are mind-boggling. Debut Live is a desert island record for me.
Okay, yeah.
Oh
I
my
have to
God.
listen to it. I gotta listen
No
to it.
drum machines on the live debut.
Oh, I love Debut, but I've never listened to Debut Live.
It is the most genius thing I have ever. Like, it makes me there. It is crazy. There's that Spinal Tap quote of like, you can't be jealous of what you can't comprehend.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Bach. But then Bjork is so good. It like it that it loops back around and like it makes me jealous of it again. And it's just like it's just. It's so good. The Debut
Yeah.
Live record is so good. It's like, oh, like
Dude, that
you
makes sense. Like every time I'm like, "Oh my God, like it's so fucking good." I'm like, "It's true. You can't even get jealous. You're just like in awe and you just enjoy it." It's one of the few times you can just enjoy something when you're just
Oh,
like
it's
blown away.
amazing. It's like there's only like a few things that are that level of like pureness for me. It's like
Yeah.
Debut Live, it's the Bach fugues, Maybe the Bach motets, most Bach probably.
Yeah.
I don't know, like Blood on the Tracks,
That's a great one.
Jonathan Richman's Catalog at Large. I don't know, man. The Damned, The Clash. I love punk rock. I don't get to play enough punk. I grew up loving punk. Talking Heads, Remain in Light, and Stop Making Sense, that the Jean Van Damme concert film.
Totally.
That's another like tier one item where it's just like how the it's
And
the
how do I get my life sets to be like that? Like, I want my life sets to be fucking nuts like that sometimes.
Oh yeah, I mean
Yeah, it's like to
that's
make it
the
a show.
oh my God, yeah. Gotta do. I mean, oh, that's so much fun. I miss playing live so much.
I know. Someone posted a video of me on the last tour and I'm out in the crowd. I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to do that ever again. Not because I don't think the quarantine's going to end, but like viruses. I never thought I'd just touch. I was like hugging all the kids in the crowd. Like, I don't know if I'm going to do that ever again.
It'll be a weird little spot we come out into.
I think there's gonna be a few different things. Like a big one is like bringing your own mic to shows. You gotta bring your own mic to shows now. I don't know. That's like one venue in Santa Barbara was trying to open again, and that was like one of their things. It was like you have to bring your own mic. We have like 36 people on the patio. I don't think that ever happened because that was supposed to happen in August, and I haven't seen a single update, so I doubt that's happening now. But when the numbers are going down, that was like the talk. Like, okay. This is how we're gonna run the show, and it's.
Interesting.
I think that will be the future right there. Maybe not sharing backline and sharing gear either. I don't know.
Huh. Well, I hope not. I hope we can share backline.
Or I guess just like wipe it down or something. I don't know.
I think we'll wipe it down. I have a feeling things will. I mean, if we're like reusing airplane seats, we're not gonna bring our
True.
own airplane seat. Like I think people are gonna be reusing backline. I hope. If we don't reuse backline, I don't know what I'm gonna do with myself.
There's nothing like going on a tour and then like the headliner's like, you can use our drum set. I'm like, oh, thank God. Yeah, you mean we can actually pack like pillows and blankets? Like, oh, good. Like, maybe we could bring more merch. Like, I don't know. Fuck.
Oh man, it's the best. When I tour, I get a U-Haul trailer.
Oh.
So that, yeah, otherwise I don't think I could do it.
You can't drive past 55 though. Or do you go are you willing to admit that you go past 55?
My lips are sealed.
Yeah, that's the only downfall for me is like it's gonna take us twice as long. Not twice, but a little longer.
So this is something I have thought about for a long time. When you
Let's hear
speak
it.
When you're going over the speed limit, you get places so incrementally faster. It is crazy. Like, if your average speed, if you're going, you don't, when you're going like 80 on the highway, you're not going 80 the whole time. Right? Your average speed is probably like 75. And versus like an average speed of 65. An average like that is so infinitesimally small. You get somewhere like 15 minutes faster if you're going like 200 miles.
That's true. It just feels, it's all about the feel. It feels slower, and then I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Oh, also in San Francisco, I got caught in the parking lot once because I couldn't back out with the trailer on.
Oh, ouch.
I was like, you turn right and it goes left, but if you turn left, it goes right. Oh, fuck.
There's definitely a trailer learning curve. That's it's actually kind of shocking that you can just rent trailers without having to get another license for that.
Or like a massive U-Haul. Just like, yeah, on our last tour, our van broke down and we had to take like a massive U-Haul and then put it on a platform and drive the van back to Santa Barbara. And that was like, damn, I should have a separate license for this. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never done this
You get
before.
another license for a motorcycle.
Yeah, like This thing is huge.
You could kill 10 people on motorcycles at the same time with a U-Haul trailer.
Oh my god. Yeah, it's gnarly.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, I miss touring. I miss stopping at a Love's, getting some combos.
Oh yeah. Bucky's, man. All the great Midwestern gas stations.
Mm-hmm. And you're just like, how far are we? Fuck, okay. And then you try and take another nap, and then you're at the venue.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, here's the U-Haul trick. It's something my dad taught me. You know those big metal shelves that you can get at like Costco for like $5?
Yeah.
You get a bunch of those, and you line the walls of the U-Haul trailer with it. You know, you get two, they go in lengthwise, and you use bungee cords. Because, you know, the U-Hauls have, like, the rails that you can bungee cord things to.
Yeah.
You bungee cord the shelves to the sides of the U-Haul. And then you use bungee cords, like, it just takes one bungee cord across each, like, shelf face to keep things from falling out. And all of a sudden, it's like having, like a gear closet rather than, like, a...
Damn. Dude, yeah, everything's just, like, going... Yeah, around so in the trailer.
Instead of having like a gear soup, like you have a little.
Yeah.
It's like it's amazing. Like wow. I became such a U-Haul convert after that. Like you just have a room that you bring around with you. It's great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But next tour I want to do it in an RV because I was driving.
I was looking at RVs last night.
Yeah. I love driving the tour bus. And so doing it in an RV would be really, really cool. Be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was looking at RVs last night. I was like, oh, can me and my girlfriend get an RV and just like leave? And like, yeah, you could. And it has it has a bed. It has a shower. It has everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the way to go. And you can just like stop in Walmart parking lots and
totally
live that way.
I did. Yeah, that's something we learned on this last tour, that you could just sleep at a Walmart parking lot.
Yeah, comes in handy in a pinch.
Yeah, we slept at a Waffle House parking lot. We were eating at a Waffle House, and we asked the woman, like, hey, is it cool if we sleep in the parking lot? She's like, oh, yeah, I do it all the time. I'm like, oh, okay. Oops. Yeah, sure. All right.
That's exactly the thing you want to hear.
I do it all the time. Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Yeah. Oh man, there's an amazing book my friend just sent me, where I think it's called Waffle House Vistas.
Uh-huh.
Let me find the name of it. Yeah, it is Waffle House Vistas. Amazing photo book of pictures taken from Waffle Houses.
Wow.
I'm always getting new photo books. I'm a ginormous photo book nerd.
Yeah.
That's another fun thing about tours. I just bring all my cameras with us and we take a lot of photographs.
That's awesome.
But Waffle House Vistas, great, great little book.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Dude,
yeah.
U-Haul shelves.
I'll be thinking about that next time, man, if we end up going the U-Haul route.
Or if you're moving.
True.
You know, or you just like want an extra room in your house, you can get a U-Haul.
Yeah, that's true. A little storage. Yeah. That's crazy, man. One thing I want to talk about too was the cover, your cover of Mamma Mia.
Oh yeah, of course.
What's the inspiration? How'd you feel like I want to do this song?
Oh, it's a great song.
Yeah, true.
That's it. It's a great song, man. I have compilation records, right? Our compilation records, like they rarely stand on any sort of artistic merit. ABBA Gold.
Yeah.
Amazing record.
Yeah.
That's also how I feel about the
Steely. Oh, that was that was my livelihood in high school. Was Greatest Hits.
Yeah, the Steely Dan Greatest Hits record is also an incredible record. I didn't know that. I thought that was a real Steely Dan record. I was like, oh shit, all of their stuff is on one record. And I remember that was high school. And then people were like, and I started seeing other Steely Dan records. I was like, there's more? It was awesome. huge realization that there was more Steely Dan.
That's awesome.
But I don't know. I love this. It's a great song.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you have a drum machine on there. Did you record that one yourself?
Yeah. So that one, the recording process of that one was wacky. I was in Japan doing field work. I was making field recordings of these giant Japanese temple bells called bonsho bells.
Yeah.
Of which there is incredibly little scholarship. There are these amazing objects. They sound so incredible. And basically I just lived in Kyoto for a month, going around and making field recordings of these bells. And all the temples close at like 5. And so afterwards it was bored. And so, you know, I wasn't bored at first, but after a month, you know, it's like 6 on a Tuesday. I'm like, what am I going to do? And so in like the last few days there, I just did that for fun.
Cool.
It's all built in Ableton synths and sounds and effects and stuff.
Wow. And how did you bring a mic with you? I guess you must, if you're doing record, you already
I had a whole field recording kit. So I had microphone stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I always travel with a little Zoom anyway. So it was.
Oh yeah. I'm recording out of the Zoom H6 right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Zoom H2 is my favorite Zoom. I have the old school Zoom H2N. I have two of them. They're
just tanks.
They're amazing, and they sound so good.
Yeah.
Crazy how good they sound. They sound so good.
Totally.
I, like, you know, over the years, I've, like, gotten more and better microphones or whatever. I always return to the H2N. There's some about it. It's so clear. The top end is really great. It just feels like ears. It feels like ears. There's so little color to it. It's wonderful.
Totally. And then you just ended up releasing, like, was on a, you know, what was your thought about releasing the cover? Were you like, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't know. My fear of releasing a cover is that, like, people will know me for the cover. Do you feel like weird about that, or do you like it?
No, I mean, it's been nice because people don't know me for the cover, you know.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that is cool. I stand by it.
That's awesome. Well, it's a fucking killer cover. I heard it on TikTok the other day. I was like, damn.
That's really fun.
Yeah.
I gotta figure out how to. I gotta. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not good at TikTok. Cool that it's on TikTok.
Oh yeah, it's doing well on TikTok. Yeah,
cool.
Well, yeah, man. Well, we could wrap it up. If people want to support Austin Weber, what's the best way to support you?
Listen to the music on Spotify. Follow me on Instagram for more updates on what's going on. You know, I have a little shop. You can get stuff that is related to me, etc.
Is that on your website, or where do you sell your merch?
Go to weberrecords.com.
Cool.
weberrecords.com.
That's right. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for chatting with me. This was really fun. Man.
Thank
I feel like we didn't really get a great chance to talk at that show. It was just like,
no, but I loved your set, man. It was so good.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah.
And also, everything about it was really tight. Even the outfits that the guys were wearing were cohesive. It's important. That shit matters.
It does. I
have a great, great, full, fully fleshed out shtick. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Oh man, thanks, man. I never think about clothes before a show, but they all talk about it. I'm like, oh damn, I've never been in a band where people talk about clothes before. I'm like, well, I'm glad you guys are handling that. I'm just gonna wear whatever.
You're not gonna rock out to people wearing like dumb things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hell yeah, man. Well, thanks for talking with me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Sick. Well, hopefully, I'll see you soon. And
yeah, see ya. Have a good day, Ruben.
See you, you too, man.